like to skip over the investment report till later. Can we can the trustees take a moment, if they have not yet, to review the minutes, please? And I'd like to call the meeting to order. I entertain a motion to approve the minutes.
So move.
I know the pastor cousin, trustee cousin, moved the approval of the minutes. Is there a second?
Second.
Second from trustee McDermott. Any discussion on the minutes? Any discussion? So Justin Elliker, yes. Pastor cousin?
Yes.
Trustee McDermott?
Yes.
Trustee Rivero?
Yes.
The minutes are approved. Let's move on to item three, administrative matters. A, review of the Brenner, Saltzman, and Wallman contracts. So as folks will recall, we've had this item on the agenda for multiple meetings, and there's been a number of questions that have come up over time. I understand that Leanna shared with us some analysis that was requested at the last meeting as to the historical cost associated with the monthly bills from the attorney's fees. Leanna, do you have anything in particular you want to share about that research and document?
Mayor, this is Carolyn Cohn. This item was tabled. I think it needs to be a motion to take it off the table before there can be that discussion.
Thank you, Attorney Cohn. Is there a motion to take the item off the table?
So moved. Second.
I note that Trustee Riviero moved to take it off the table, and Pastor Cousins seconded that motion. So discussion on the item. Leanna, do you have anything that you'd like to add as far as the analysis?
No, we just compiled an Excel sheet of what the bills were for 2019 and then what they've been for 2020 monthly. And then we put the total for the entire year of 2019 and what it's been so far for 2020. In addition, I looked back in the minutes, I believe it was in November. Let me double check. I think it was November
21st.
Yeah, November of 2019, those minutes was the report that the trustees, made the motion to continue the payment arrangement at the hourly rate and then to revisit it in 1 year. And at that meeting, it was discussed that it was the options of the flat fee versus hourly. The flat fee would be $6,000 per month with four exemptions. I believe those were litigation, quadro, investment, transaction reviews, and special projects. And then after that discussion is when the trustees made a motion to continue at the hourly rate instead of the flat fee.
So just to be clear on the history of this, the trustees in November voted to continue at the hourly rate. Then there was a discussion of redoing the contract or completing the contract. The trustees asked for the city's corporation council to review the contract. Corporation council said, no, we don't think that's appropriate. Then we had discussions in January and February about the trustees reviewing the contract on their own. And so the trustees have already in November, at least, decided to go with the hourly rate because there was some questions last time about that. Of course, the trustees can always revisit this question, but it was already decided, and it was more a question of the details of the contract that we're looking at now. Is that
correct?
Okay. Is there any discussion on the item? And I have the this analysis that Leanne has done on the screen.
Yes, good morning, Mayor Elliker. It's Trustee Rivera. I looked at the contract and I just have a couple of questions, if I may. Okay. I'm for the effective date and term of an agreement. What is the effective date that we're going to use? Are we going to go back to the November date, or is it going to be a date going forward?
This is Attorney Carolyn Cohn. So we, because the there's an increase in the rate, it was at $280, and the increase, which was set many, many years ago, and the increase is for $300. And because we have billed at the rate of $280 since, you know, forever, what we've done with SURF was to have the effective date be June 1st, because otherwise we'd have to redo the bills.
That would be June 1st. In the 3 years, is that standard for the contract?
I think it was what was requested in the RFP, but of course it's up to you to decide how many years you wish to, you know, remain. And again, it's a 30-day termination by either party.
Okay. If that's what was in the RFP, then
you know, I'm not sure. I don't know. Mr. Segno, he's on. I can't remember, Evelise. It was so long ago.
But I would just propose, because I don't have a copy of the RFP, and I don't know if the other trustees do. I would just propose that we would just adopt whatever the language was. So if it is 3 years in the RFP, then that's what we adopt. If it's something different, then that's
what we should adopt. I think it may have been nothing, you know. So it'd be better to adopt a period for the contract now.
Okay. So I still have other questions, but I would just propose then to the trustees that we probably make another motion regarding the years that we want the contract. And maybe you can give a little history as to, like, what was the terms in the previous contract, do you recall?
We've been over 45 years counsel for the pension fund, and we've never had a contract. So.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, then I would just probably just suggest that we just pick a term, you know, make a motion for that. My other question.
And the term protects, I think, the board in terms of fixing the amount.
Understood.
Can't come in and ask for a raise during the term.
Okay, understood. My other question is, due to the fact that we, under Exhibit B, due to the fact that we agreed, we voted on an hourly base.
Yes.
I'm sorry, hourly rate basis, based on the schedule that you gave us at that meeting, which was 300 right. Down the line for all attorneys and 100 each for paralegals.
Yes.
Is there a reason to have number 2 in the Exhibit B for flat fee basis if we're not going to be exercising that, or does it imply that we're also doing flat fee?
So the reason why that's in there is so that when you revisit this in a year, let's say the contract were for 3 years, so if you revisit in a year and you said, okay, we want to go to flat fee, it's already in the contract what the flat fee arrangement is. But it is only since you've selected under B one at the moment, everything under 2 would not apply. But when you come back in a year, let's say the contract's 3 years, and you say, oh, we want to switch, then it's already in the contract for what the switch would be.
Okay. Can we then, under number 10, under fees, can we make that a little clearer? Because it does speak to paragraphs 1 and 3 and then paragraphs 2 and 3, but it's sort of confusing. So if we can maybe clean up that language a little bit so it's clearer that that number 2 option is upon review.
Okay.
Is there a way to clarify that language now?
Well, I can just add a sentence in that says that the fees and costs to be charged during the first year of this agreement shall be those set forth in paragraphs 1 and 3 of Exhibit B and not those set forth in paragraph 2 of Exhibit B.
That's acceptable to me. So And my last thing is, which is probably a small thing, but I noticed in number two and number four, in terms of assigned personnel, we did name Leanna. We named Leanna number two. It does say, or other such person, but is it really pertinent to name the person? Because what if she decides to leave within 6 months? Would we have to revise the contract? I mean, could we just put her title, or is it important to put her name?
Yep.
And
the pension administrator, right? Mm-hmm. And also under, no, I'm sorry.
Yeah, there. And you also have under the paralegal, you do have a sentence saying that you could substitute from time to time, but is it important to have her name? Is she like the only one assigned, or?
She's the only one assigned for pension, mm-hmm. but I can do whatever you'd like. I mean,
it's just a question. I mean, the other trustees can, you know, state, you know, what their thoughts are on that, but it was basically just a question. I mean, if it's standard, I'm okay with it. I just would be concerned that you'd have a contract with individuals' names for the next 3 years, and if those individuals leave, that if there could be some type of issue regarding, you know, what we agreed to. That would just be my only concern. But if that's standard language, then I'm fine with it.
Well, you know, we've have these new contracts with the medical consultant and with Hooker and Holcomb, and so we created this base format for those contracts. So I just took it over for the legal services, but I don't have to name the paralegal. That's up to you guys.
Okay. Those are just my concerns. So I'm done. Thank you.
I think that the last concern, by the way, thank you, Trustee Rivera, for taking so much time to review the contract in detail, because we've had a lot of conversation about making sure that we have confidence in the contract. So appreciate all the effort there. The last concern is more of an issue for the attorney Cohn than it is for us. If they have to hire someone new and they have to change the contract, it's more of a hassle for them to have to come back to us.
I think it says that we can change upon, but maybe it doesn't say it.
No, it does say that you can substitute. It doesn't say upon her leaving the firm or anything like that, but it does say that you have the right to substitute the paralegal.
So it's a good point, but probably can be addressed. Can we clarify on the terms? So if we're, the first point that Trustee Rivera raised about being clear on the term, it does say 3 years from the date that the contract starts, correct?
Correct.
And, or your intention is that you would delete the 3 years and put in whatever the end date is?
Yes. So
it's June 1st.
May 31st, 2023. Yeah.
Right. Yes. Is the intention. So to clarify your concern, Trustee Rivera, you think that term should be changed or not changed, given that we can terminate the contract with 30 days notice at any time?
No, I'm okay with that. I was just wanted to know if that was standard language for this type of contract. I mean, I've seen it where you have renewal options. You have like a year with one or two renewal options up to 3 years, as opposed to three straight years. The only thing is that if it's a renewal option, then we'd have to vote on it every year, which would probably make sense if we're going to review it again in November anyways, that we could, November, whenever is appropriate, we could at that point decide to renew it, as opposed to letting it go for 3 years and then we decide that we want to terminate within that 3 years. So that's the option, but I'm fine with either way, whatever, you know, the trustees are comfortable with.
So just as the contractor, you know, we've been at this since 2014, 6 years trying to get this contract. I don't know if you'd have to renew it, if you'd have to go out for another RFP. I really would prefer not to go through this process unless not totally necessary.
Yes, I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Trustee.
No, I was gonna say, understood. I just want to, for the record, just say I'm not opposed to it. I'm just bringing it up so in a year from now, we don't find ourselves in a situation that, well, why didn't we think about this? But I'm not opposed to a 3-year contract. So just for the record.
And that's also the term, as I said, that we did for the medical consultant and for the actuary.
Okay.
Are there other questions from any other trustee?
This is Trustee Cannon. I apologize for technical difficulties getting on. I did jump on. Did I hear that we, from Attorney Cohn, that we've operated in the past without a contract?
That's correct.
And now we have to have a contract? We cannot continue just what we're doing now?
I think this, and Jerry can help me. I think what happened was in 2014, it was felt that we didn't have a contract with our medical consultant, we didn't have a contract with the actuaries, and we didn't have a contract for legal services, and that was really not a great practice. And so at that time, a RFP was done for all three, and then there was never a decision. And then in 2017, an RFP was done for all three professional services. And I believe in 2018 or 2000, we were awarded or selected. I think it, under our rules of, our ethical rules, we're really supposed to have at least a retainer agreement with our clients. So I would prefer to have a contract with the city, with the pension board.
Of course. How long have you been involved with the pension?
Personally, myself, as opposed to the firm?
Both.
The firm, I think, is about 45 years. It was under Kennedy Mitchell, who was the controller, and he selected our firm. I believe I began doing this work either in 2006 or 2004. I'm not quite sure.
Okay. I think Evelise Ribeiro, Trustee Ribeiro, brought up great points. I mean, is there a possibility that we amend this to a different term to revisit it a year from now?
I think that we have that option with the 30-day termination. If we decide things aren't going well, we can say we're planning on terminating the contract unless we renegotiate it, and then we can renegotiate it. That's yes. We have a lot of flexibility there.
I understand that 30-day, Trustee Ellicker, but if we were to terminate, I think that it would be a little more difficult to pick up with another firm right away without an RFP. So, I mean, it does give us an option. You know, it's probably a little smarter on our part, fiduciary wise, to have a revisit 1 year from now. I mean, we've operated in the past, as Attorney Cohen has pointed out, without a contract for many, many years. So I don't think putting a little stipulation in there would be harmful as far as a year. We also went without a bylaws for, I want to guesstimate, 30 or 40 years also, which just recently got completed. So, I mean, there's been some practices in the past, obviously, that needed to be cleaned up. But I think that it wouldn't hurt us to visit Trustee Ribeiro's option there, where a year from now, we come back and look at that. I don't think, you know, based on the past history with no contracts at all, no bylaws at all, that we've made strides in cleaning up a lot of the things involved with this pension, but I think that we would probably be a little bit more wiser if we revisited this a year from now, just to make sure, because we are going to a new payment structure, I believe. So it may be our best interest. Also, I mean, this has been a long time with the same firm. So are we doing our due diligence and looking at the best options? You know, that RFP previous was a previous administration, and it seems like forever ago. So a lot of things have changed, not just in the world with COVID, but a lot of things have changed with the pension as far as finance and trustees. And I think it's possible that We'd be better off looking into it a year from now. I think it's smart, sound fiduciary responsibility.
If I just may add, so under fees, if you look at it, it states that within the first year, we could take a look at this and say, okay, the hourly rate was not feasible. We want to go for the flat fee. But then if we do that, then we're locked in for the flat fee for the remaining 2 years of the contract. It doesn't give us an option to revisit it after a second year if we wanted that. So that would just be.
We can, this is Attorney Cohn, I can add that as well. Every year, okay. We can annually revisit.
Okay.
You can annually revisit which structure you wanted. I can certainly add that in.
Okay, yeah, I would be comfortable with that, that, you know, we have the option to, you know, really take a look at it every year and really, you know, discuss fees and terms and things like that, as opposed to being locked in for 3 years where we have no wiggle room to do anything except to terminate the contract and then go through the whole RFP process, which we know does not take 30 days. It's a long process. And I just wouldn't want the board to be in a position that we're not happy with the services or the fees, and then we find ourselves without any type of legal representation. So that, however we can word it, that protects the board in that regard, and also, you know, is amenable to the firm, I would be comfortable with.
So let me ask a couple of questions. So should it be revisiting all the terms annually or just the fees?
I think all the terms. I don't know how the other trustees feel, but I think it's fair to review all the terms, and not just me, but I don't know how the other trustees feel.
Yeah, I think it's helpful to give us the option to do that. I don't think it's a good idea to require us to do that.
Right.
Okay.
I agree.
I'll add it in both to the fees and then overall the terms of an annual review. Also, if you know, needed to go and look at for another firm, I mean, you could start that process more than 30 days, you know?
Correct.
And if you wanted to get rid of us in fewer than 30 days, you could do that. I mean, it'd be fine with me. You know, if you're not happy, you're not happy.
Just for the record, I just want to put out this, it's not about, for me personally, it's not about being unhappy with the firm. I mean, I don't have any issues with you or the firm. I just want to just, you know, make sure that, you know, the contract is good for the board. I mean, you know, if I'm not here in 2 years, or anyone else on the board is not here in 2 years, want to be able that we can carry it forward for whoever the future trustees are, at least under the terms of this contract.
Okay. Thank you.
Other questions from the trustees? So can we summarize the potential amendments here to the contract? One is making clear that the term is June 1st, 2020, to May 31st, 2023. A clarification around the fee structure that Trustee Ribeiro raised to make sure that it's clear that we are not doing the kind of retainer style fee or the monthly fee, but rather the hourly fee. Removing Leanna's name and putting her title. No offense, Leanna. And adding language, every year the trustees have the option to revisit the contract in its entirety, should they so choose. Is there anything that we're missing there?
No, this is Carolyn Cohn. I will probably put that revisiting both in the fees and in general, as a general put into place.
Okay. So I've just outlined a potential amendment to the contract. Is there a motion to propose that amendment to the contract?
Motion to propose by Trustee Cannon, all the details of the amendment just pointed out by Trustee Elicker.
Second.
Second by Trustee Ribeiro. Any discussion on the motion to amend? So although in favor of the motion to amend, Trustee Cannon. Trustee Cannon, do you vote yes or no on the motion to amend?
Yes.
Trustee Ribeiro?
Yes.
Trustee Cousin?
Yes.
Trustee McDermott?
Yes.
And Justin Elicker is a yes. So the item's been amended, and I think now we have to do a motion to approve the contract, correct?
Correct.
So Trustee Cannon?
Yes.
Trustee Ribeiro?
Yes.
Trustee Cousin?
Yes.
Trustee McDermott?
Yes.
And Justin Elicker is a yes. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Moving on to item 3, B, outside earnings delaying sanctions. Do I hear a motion to, in order to facilitate discussion, or do I hear a motion on the item?
So moved.
Do I hear a second?
Second.
So the item's been moved by Trustee Ribeiro and seconded by Trustee Cousin. Does staff have any kind of summary of this item?
This is Leanna Ambersley. Every year there, by April 30th, those who retired with less than 13 years of service for a disability pension have to report their, sign an affidavit for outside earnings. They're not able to make more than what the current rank salary is. If they do, they have an adjustment to their pension. So it's an affidavit that's mailed out to them around February 1st, and it's due April 30th of each year. And they do not need to provide their tax return with it like the SERF members do. They just have to have this form filled out and notarized. It does include where they, you know, they would need their figures from their 1040, but they do not need to supply it with the affidavit. We have about 4 members, retirees, who have not submitted it yet. A member of my staff, we've sent out, you know, a second notice around May 1st, and then a member of my staff called them around the middle of May. 3 of those 4 we can't get a hold of by phone. One of them is in the process of submitting it. But usually what happens is come June 1st, they get a third and final notice, and then their pension is put on hold. It's inactivated starting in June if they don't, until they comply and submit, you know, the proper form. So I spoke to Carolyn Cohn about it to see if if we could delay it due to the pandemic, or if the trustees wanted to vote on delaying shutting off their pension a little bit longer. So that's why we brought it before the board today.
So just to be clear, if the trustees don't vote on anything, then their pensions will be stopped until they provide the information, correct?
Correct, starting with their June payment.
And you've tried to reach out to them multiple times?
The initial form was mailed in February. A second notice was mailed May 1st once, you know, the deadline closed. And then we made phone calls also about a week and a half ago. At that time, there were 6. So since then, we've received 2 more since the phone calls.
If the payments are stopped, do they have the option to get those payments if they do in the future provide the paperwork?
Yeah, I believe so they wouldn't get the June payment. Jerry might be able to add to this. Unfortunately, I was on maternity leave last year, so I don't know what was done last year during this time. But I believe that it would be stopped, but then once they comply, you know, they would be given that money again.
Well, question for me. The checks that you're sending out, are they being deposited into a particular account, or have they been actually being, you know, executed?
The what checks?
The like checks,
the pension check?
Yeah, the pension checks. Are they being deposited into like accounts, or have you actually seen the transaction between the two, between the city and whoever you send the pension out to?
The pension, the checks.
I mean, I haven't checked their pension accounts. I would. Most of them have direct deposit.
Right.
I haven't, but yeah, I haven't. There had been no need for me to check to see if they had been cashed, so I hadn't looked into that.
That's my only concern. Where, you know, we're talking about potentially stopping payments because they're not verifying information. But I can see the checks weren't being cashed, but if they are, I think we may need to look into a little bit more before we just completely cut them off until they provide the documentation.
I think if it goes for direct deposit, though, I mean, it's the assumption once it's there, it is cash as opposed to a check where you have to take it to the bank and sign off on it. So once it's in direct deposit, it's there, and I don't see how we can go and check to see if they spent it. Basically, is theirs.
This is Carolyn Cohn. The reason why I thought it should come before you was that because it's the earnings and people have the extension of time until mid-June, right, to file their federal tax returns, their state tax returns, many of these people may not have the information that they need or focused on what their earnings were for 2019 until they do those tax returns. So I thought that it would be appropriate to give them a little bit more time so that they can do, at least they're doing their tax returns, and to fill it out with Leanna the information.
But the tax returns will be for 2019. So how would that affect them getting a payment in June for tax?
The fact what they're asked to report and haven't reported is their earnings for 2019.
Yeah, they have to. So the outside earnings, these are retirees who retired with less than 13 years of service on a disability pension. So they have an earnings cap each year. They can't. So if the current salary of what their title was say $75,000, for example, they cannot make in combination of what their pension is plus outside earnings more than $75,000 per year. If they do, then there's an amount that they pay back monthly in their pension. So there's a form that gets mailed out to them that they fill out saying, I earned X amount of dollars from my pension, X amount of dollars, if anything, from outside earnings for a total of blank. And then it's notarized. That's basically what they're submitting. So if they, you know, did make more than what the current salary is, we adjust their pension. If they didn't, then nothing changes. So that's what's due each year by April 30th, which four members have not submitted yet.
Can you hear me? With those persons that their payments could potentially be stopped on June 1st if they don't provide the proper documentation?
What was the beginning of your question? I'm sorry, it cut off.
Have you notified those who are not in compliance with your procedure that their potential payments could be stopped on June 1st?
Mm-hmm. Yes. In the initial letter that's sent to them, it states that. Then in the second letter that we emailed May 1st, it stated that, you know, that their pension would be shut off and put on hold come June 1st. It has, I mean, they've been well aware of that since the first letter went out.
Jerry is anxious to weigh in. And we did hear you, but now you're back on mute, Jerry.
Let me see if I can unmute.
You're fighting about the muting.
Yeah.
You're both trying to unmute at the same time.
Jerry, hit the unmute button.
It's on the bottom.
There you go.
There you go. Go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
I don't understand why. I mean, administratively, we've handled this. This situation has come up before us. There's nothing novel about it. And it's very simple. I mean, there's rules and regulations. And if people did not respond the way they had to with the information, we stopped their pension. And it was very effective. And immediately we got what we wanted and we put them back on. And if we owed them any retro, we paid them their retro. I mean, this has happened before. It's nothing new. It's been handled administratively. Luckily, there's not many people that do this. So I don't know. I can understand where the issue comes up that because of the COVID, they have a longer period of time to file their income tax. But their W-2s come out in February. And they don't have to send us their 1040s to complete this process. So they know by their W-2s whether they made more money or not, and they can put that in their letter. So the issue of with the income tax is something that affects SERF people, because the SERF trustees require the SERF retirees to present their 1040. The police and fire opted not to do that. All we require from them is a verification letter form, and they can give us that based on their W-2s that they received in February, sometimes earlier than that. So I don't think the submission of the taxes by June has anything to really do with this. Again, the issue should be handled administratively. It's been done before in the past, and I don't see why we have to come to the trustees to labor them with an administrative matter.
The only reason why I added it was just because of the pandemic and COVID, and I didn't want it to end up being where there was a complaint by one of these retirees due to that, and it wasn't brought before the trustee. So yeah, that's fine. I just wanted to bring it to their attention if they did want to extend it because of the pandemic.
Yeah, I can understand letting them know about it in case they hear complaints, but I don't think.
This is Carolyn Conan. It was my idea to bring it to the trustees. So
the only thing that I'd ask for that is if there's anybody from the police department on that list. You said it's only four people, right?
Yeah.
If Trustee Cannon and myself could get a copy of that list, that we could each maybe put one last attempt out to contact any of our people on the list, so we could try to get a hold of them and see if we could get them in compliance with this. This way, sure. We're making an outgoing phone call instead of receiving an angry one coming in.
Sure, no problem. I can email you both the list of the four names.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thanks for that offer, Trustee McDermott. Yeah, this is Justin Allegra. I tend to agree with Jerry that, first of all, it's four people, and there's been three attempts, separate attempts to reach each one of the people, and it'll be retroactive if once they don't receive a check. And if they're like me, if I don't receive a check, I'll start to really work to find that money. So I think that's kind of an incentive for people to complete the paperwork if it's not that difficult to do.
Okay, sounds good. So we'll move forward the way that we had planned.
I just want to make sure that there's consensus among the trustees before we're doing it. Does anyone else have any other discussion on this item?
No.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm in consensus with you.
Okay. This is not an item we need to vote on, though. This is just for informational, right? Okay. If I may, are there any other items we need to vote on? Because I actually have a 9:00 work meeting, so I want to make sure that we have a quorum
before I have to log off. So it looks like item 5 is that. Do we? Is that information only, Leanna? Or
no, item 5, which is the service connected disabilities. There's 9 individuals who we finally, thankfully, got medical reports for. That will need to be voted on, and the bills would need to be voted on.
So let's move on to item 5. Is there anything that staff wants to share with us on item 5?
Well, just to review, these are already individuals who retired on an age annuity from both the police department and the fire department. And they also applied for service-connected disability. They were seen by Yale Occupational, and we received the medical reports back from them, which have been provided in the email. There's 9 of them, So the trustees just need to make a motion to either approve or deny the disability pension for all nine of these individuals.
Thanks for your work getting the folks at Yale to respond.
Yeah, no problem.
This is Carolyn Cohn. So if you're going to be discussing, as the trustees know, any of the medical records, you need to go into executive session, which Leanna can facilitate on Zoom.
Okay. So is there a motion on the table to approve these items?
Motion to approve, Trustee Cannon.
Second.
Second.
Second from Trustee McDermott. Is there any discussion on these items? Not going into the details of specific ones.
Attorney Cohn, I have a general question. It's not specific to any one individual. Can I ask that in open session?
Yeah, just as long as we're not talking about medical records of any individual.
The question just is generally, does a disability rating have to be assigned to medical records?
This is Eve Dussopt, the workers' compensation coordinator. They don't always have a disability rating. It depends on whatever the specific injury is, the work-related injury. So not always is there a disability rating.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other discussion? Okay. Trustee Cannon.
Yes.
Trustee Cousin.
Yes.
Trustee McDermott.
Yes.
Trustee Ribeiro.
Yes.
And Justin Elliker is a yes. That item passes. Can we move to item 8, please, payment of the bills? Do I hear a motion to approve this item?
Motion to approve.
See, I hear a motion from Trustee Cousins and a second from Trustee Ribeiro. Is there any discussion on payment of the bills?
Yes, Trustee Ribeiro again. So I just have a question. I think it's the Cook and Beeler invoice. Is this for the first quarter?
Yeah, it's for quarter one. Let me grab
the because I believe last month we approved that we have a $65,000 refund coming back to us.
It's a different, they did send that check. Grab it. So the one that's provided here is for the mid-cap account. And the one that they said do not need to pay is for the small cap account. And they did provide us with the check that we sent to Raymond James last Friday. That was for a total amount of $38,870.16.
Okay, so this $32,969 is something that we do owe.
Yeah, that is
refund.
Yep, that's for the mid cap. The refund was for the small cap account.
Okay. Thanks for the clarification.
No problem.
Thank you for that question. Are there any other questions on payment of the bills? Okay. I try to mix it up a little bit. Trustee Cousin.
Yes.
Trustee McDermott.
Yes.
Trustee Cannon.
Yes.
Trustee Ribeiro.
Yes.
And Trustee Elliker is a yes. I think those are all the items that are urgent to vote on, Trustee Ribeiro, if you want to take off. Is that correct, Leanna or Attorney Cohn?
Yes.
Yes, that is it.
Okay. Thank you. So let's
thank
go back.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you. So item number 4, I just want to note for information only, the age annuity retirement item. We can take a quick look at that. Item number 6, death after retirement. Again, information only. Michael Giovanni, who passed away on March 25th, 2020. I'd ask the trustees to have a moment of silence for the passing of Mr. Giovanni. Item number 7, survivor death after retirement, information only. Grace Bissonette passed away on 5/6/2020. Ask trustees to have a moment of silence for the passing of Ms. Bissonette. Item number 9, is there any old business? Item 10, any new business? So let's move on to the investment report.
Hi, good morning. Dave Moran from Raymond James.
Morning.
Everybody's doing well. Can you all hear me?
Yes.
Okay, good. I know last time we had a little bit of a problem with my enunciation. I just wanted to, before I started, talk about that Cook and Baylor bill. They owed us a grand total of, or they owed you a grand total of $65,294.39. So that was a combination of the check that was received and sent back into the fund and the waiving of a bill that was in the first quarter. So we should be square with Cook and Baylor as far as fees. Again, if you want to put up some of the information that I sent out, we're going to go with the slides that have the data on it. So not the commentary, the other one.
You sent 3 of them. Let me see.
So it should say April report for PNF.
Let me open it. Sorry, guys. Here it is. Can you guys see it?
There we go. There's a lot of emails that go back and forth. So this is the end of April numbers, as you can see. A lot has changed. Actually, can you zoom in a little bit there, Rihanna, if that's possible? There you go. So we're reporting the end of April numbers. And again, there's been a dramatic change in the markets since then. So instead of explaining every single manager as far as what has changed, I'm going to touch on just 1 or 2 points about what's changed in the last 30 days instead of ruining it next month, because we'll be repeating ourselves all over again. You know, police and fire tends to meet very late in the month, so the data seems to be a little bit dated, and that's just the nature of it. So on this page, you can look at the number year date through April. You can see that obviously equity markets have been challenged in this year. As you can see in this chart, it talks about the Russell 3000 down to the Russell 2000 value. So basically, large cap has dominated the market as far as bouncing back. So in April, you can see that we had a good return on large cap stocks. If you go to the year to date number, you can see that the smaller the capitalization, the more that the market has been hard to deal with. International, again, bounced back for April. Year-to-date numbers are just as bad. And if you go down to fixed income, we did see a little bit of a bounce in the last couple of weeks, but it's been a decent year. And if you look down, treasuries have been basically the best investment within fixed income. If you go down to higher risk fixed income, you look at the Barclays, you can see that the higher the risk, the lower the return. Higher risk or higher yielding assets and fixed income tend to correlate more with stocks. Real estate below that, again, bounced in April. You can see year to date and challenged down 18%. Alternatives or hedge funds are down also in that year to date number. So it's been challenging pretty much everywhere you look. So we go to the next page. This talks about the fund. So for the month, you can see we had a pop back in the fund for April, up 7.45%. And you can see over to the right, our year-to-date number is down 9.34. Now, compared to our benchmarks, that's pretty good on the year-to-date number. Just to give you a one comment as to what's happened in the last roughly 30 days, the portfolio, as it sits right now, is down about 3.74%, not including the alternatives. So as you can see, that's a dramatic increase in return, roughly 700 basis points in return. So had a great bounce back here. And we'll talk about that when it comes to individual managers also. Look on the large cap stocks. Sizer is our largest portfolio of actively managed money. We've been adding to that. I know Derek and I talked about adding money to it the last couple of months, so that's been a benefactor of that. So for the month, up a little over 12%. You can see for the three-month period and the one-year period, it's negative, but again, outpacing the S&P 500. So they've done a good job of catching up when markets are up and protecting principal when markets are down. Aristotle, great month, 13% versus the Russell 1000. If you look over to the next number, you can see the dramatic outperformance of about 10%. Versus their bogey for the last three-month period. So that, we go down to mid-caps. You can see that Cook & Bieler on the mid-cap value side up about 13% for the month. But again, for the three-month and one-year number, been hit really hard. Doing pretty well in the last 3 months versus their last two periods, three months and year-to-date, performing their index. Some of these lines blur together, I apologize. Mutual of America, also mid-cap, bounced back for the month, outpacing their index, and just pretty much in line for the year to date. The next two items are line items that need to be erased and just partial portfolios. Below that, you have small cap growth, Clearbridge, up 16% for the month. Again, down about 12, give or take, outperforming their benchmark of the 2000 growth. If you look at the small cap value, up very well for the month. A little bit of rotation here. We'll talk about that, especially going into this month. Actually, I got to stay on that page for 1 second. Yeah, no problem. So you see Clearbridge and then Cook & Bieler. So if you look at the year-to-date numbers, the three-month and year-to-date numbers of the small cap growth, Clearbridge versus small cap value, if you look over the numbers, there's a dramatic difference when it comes to leadership in this market. Going back to large cap, I mean, I'm sure you folks watch TV, but they've been talking about the FANG stocks, and those are really what's been driving this market on the growth side. You have Facebook, Apple, Netflix, Google. So if you look at those four names going into this month, they really dominated returns. So growth, whether it's large cap, mid cap, small cap, has really outperformed. So we're looking forward to a little bit of rotation, hopefully back into both sides of the market, which would be healthy. Channing, below that, Channing's been a little bit challenged. We've had a history with Channing. We took some money away from them. They're still on watch with us. They did have a decent bounce back in April. As you can see, they're underperforming for the three-month and year-to-date number. But as of this morning, I was checking into their numbers, and they've bounced back dramatically in the last few weeks. And, in fact, they're actually month-to-date up about 11.43%. So they're really outperforming in May versus what their bogey is. So we'll keep an eye on them. They've done well, long term, but challenged in recent. So we'll keep an eye on those. So the next page, WCM, a manager in both SURF and Police and Fire, our largest, besides indexing, our largest manager within international, up stack for the month, dramatically outperforming for the 3 month and year to date number versus their index. We have an index fund there. As you can see, pretty straightforward with the trigger note. Lazard, manager, international manager, one of the largest in the world, up about 6.7 for the month and lagging for the 3 month and lagging for the year to date. So we'll keep an eye on them and we'll talk to them. I'll give them a call in the next week or so. Both indexes below that, pretty much in line. We go down to fixed income, our bond managers. Western Asset up 215 versus 178, doing their job. Mutual of America fixed income up 1.23 versus what they're benched against. Cincinnati really bouncing back. Cincinnati's more of a corporate fixed income manager versus Treasury. So as you can see, as stocks move up, you're going to see the corporate managers bounce back stronger than the Treasury managers. So next page. talks about our cash. We're sitting with a little less than that. We just sent out benefits. So by the end of June, we should be looking at between $15 and $18 million on the books in cash. There's something coming due in an index. We also have money over at BNY and our alternatives portfolios. So we should be in a pretty good position going into June, July, and then in August, we get another tranche of about $10 million coming into the fund. So when we get back into the commentary, I'll make some suggestions as to what we do right now. But for now, we're in a decent position to pay benefits for the next, obviously, 3 to 4 months. And we'll talk about after that when we get there. We'll deploy. The rest of it's alternatives. As you can see, there's a lot of them, and we could progress probably into the – I just want to take one page to look at, which was let's see here. If you keep on going, Leanna, for a couple pages, I'll tell you when to stop. As you can see, how many investments we have in the portfolio, a lot of alternatives that don't correlate necessarily with equity or fixed income markets. Talks about asset allocation. I want to keep on going a couple more. This is a good page. This is what I want to do. So this is our asset allocation. As you can see, there are a lot of moving parts, a lot. And that's diversification. And it should save us if you go up one more. I'm sorry. Diversification, what, again, goes back to our principles of what we do here, making sure that we stick to our investment policy. No, go back up, sorry. Investment policy statement followed by our asset allocation, which is key to stick to in these type of markets when there's tremendous volatility. Hopefully all of these assets don't correlate directly with equity markets. So if you can go to the other slides, does anyone have any questions about the portfolio? I know that, again, these numbers are dated. There's been a tremendous move in equity markets in the last 30 days. We'll talk about that in our next meeting, but there's no questions on the actual underlying portfolios. We'll talk about some market commentary, what we think is going on, and what we think is going to happen. Sure.
On the slide 11, which in the presentation is number 9, I don't know if you could, Leanna just disappeared, but.
Give me 1 second, I'll bring it back.
I got it. Is the asset allocation over time changing because of choices you're making or because the market is changing in a way that that just adjusts this this high level allocation between equity and fixed income, real estate, et cetera?
Sure. So the answer is both. So when we look at our composites and what we're aiming for in the long run, two things change that. Over the last number of years, we have looked to lower our allocation to fixed income. We continue to think over time, as well as the rest of the market, that fixed income and interest rates would rise over a period of time. Now, typical of Wall Street and the economy and everything else, it often surprises you. So the opposite has happened. Rates have plummeted based on a number of different issues, mostly COVID. So when you have an asset allocation, we tweak it based on what we think is going to happen in the market. So we go to the board and say, we're going to be lower on our allocation of fixed income based on this. And we're going to go higher on our end of equities based on this. So there's room within the investment policy statement to go high on your allocation in certain assets or low on your allocation in certain assets. It gives us the flexibility to do that. But to your point, markets move and allocations change. So if equity markets rip higher, obviously we're going to have a higher allocation to equity. So we look to rebalance that over periods of time. So the easiest way to rebalance that is to look at where we need cash sometimes in order to pay benefits. So we'll tweak it like that. We'll make a suggestion to the board to either take from a manager and add to a new asset class, or when we get new money in, again, add to a different asset class. So two things. We try to be strategic and more importantly, tactical when we think markets are going in one direction, and then the market itself changes their allocation based on what things are working and what things aren't.
And if I may add, a good example to that, Mr. Mayor, is the large cap growth component that we've been adding over the last several months from the cash. So we've been reducing cash, adding to tactically the large cap growth space, which is a theme that we believe in and it seems to be playing out. So that's another example of how an allocation can change.
Okay. Thanks.
You know, the other part of the presentation, Leanne, if you like.
The commentary part?
Yeah. Please, okay. It should, the one that says May.
This one? No?
It's actually the one after the other one. They're similar, but we'll go with the other one to start. It's a similar story on the macro level.
Here we go.
Sure. So I'm not going to read this verbatim. I'm going to give you one sentence, and then if you'd like to leave for the day, you could probably do that because it's a recurring theme. Bear markets are fast and violent is what we have. So we have a very, very quick and violent bear market. We believe that bull markets last for years. So we're going to use pullbacks as buying opportunities. And we'll get into some history as to why we think that might happen. So that's the story that we're going to tell today. Again, we think that we're having a dramatic V-shaped bottom here. We think that macroeconomic numbers troughed in April in the last 30 days or so, or 60 days or so. And history says that volatility will continue. But if we can handle that volatility and invest, you know, liquid cash into the market at those low points, we should do well over time. So to give you some history, we can go into the next couple pages. So if you page forward. There's only a couple different charts here I want to talk about. So you can go back, sorry. Actually,
this is page 3.
That's good, yep. So this talks about what the market has done currently and what the market we believe is going to do going forward. So if you look at the top left-hand slide right there, it talks about what's happened in our markets. So we had the fastest pull down in 40 days in history. So violent turns in markets to the downside. And since then, we've seen a 30% roughly return on the market bouncing back. So that happened in 2019, right now, currently. And if you look over at 2007, 2009, which is the great financial crisis, you saw a similar pattern. So up 36% from the bottom in that time frame. If you look down below that, talks about earnings, same type of thing. Earnings coming down and bottoming and then bouncing back up. Look at the price of equities versus their earnings. You can see in the long run, it's a similar type of chart. You keep on going there to the next. So technical charts are when people look at strictly movements of markets on a chart. And there's two different ways to do this business. There's fundamental research, which talks about individual whether it's a stock or individual fixed income position. That's fundamental work, meaning that you look at the company, you figure out if it's a great company, if they're going to earn more money going forward and you buy that company. Technical charts, whether it's an individual stock or market, tell you basically levels in which the market wants to either go up or go down. So basically in the top chart, it talks about where we were, where we're going, and what's going to happen based on what's called support and resistance. So if you look at that chart, look at the 2191 up to the 3130, we think that, again, there's support below this market at a certain level. So it's pretty easy to figure out. If things get cheap enough, people go out there and buy them. And if things get too expensive, people decide not to buy them anymore. So we're in a situation now where the market's bounced back very, very strongly. And we get into the next couple of charts to talk about how that's great. We've had a great rebound, but we're going to have some choppiness going forward, which is not the worst thing in the world. It's probably healthy, but we need to be prepared for that. So you want to page forward, Leanna?
The next page? This is 4. 5.
I mean, sorry. Go forward. Again, on the bottom, this talks about history. So 2009 and 1982. I'm not quite sure I remember 1982 as well, but 2009, you can see again, dramatic pullbacks, I mean, dramatic increase in the markets. Then you can see within that bull market, you can see sharp pullbacks of anywhere from 6 to 7% or 7 to 5%. So again, when we talked about what the first line that I said is that we think that we're beyond the worst, the worst is behind us. And we think that we'll continue to go higher over the next number of years. We need to prepare for those not inevitable, most likely inevitable pullbacks of anywhere from 5 to 8%. That's what history tells us.
May I add a comment, Leanne? If you could just go back one slide, please.
Sure.
Thanks. So that top chart there, what Dave was talking about, the resistance levels and support levels, what the market seems to be doing here is kind of moving. We think it's going to move sideways between that, you know, 3,000, 3,130, and that 2,630. And as you can see, it already started to move sideways. That's healthy, but in those moves represent, you know, 6%, 7%, 8% moves up and down. So we anticipate that happening. So when we do see down moves, that's when we would come to you and say, hey, there's an opportunity to add more to equities or what have you. But that typically happens before there's another leg up. So we, to Dave's point, we expect increased volatility, 6%, 7%, 8% moves over the next several months. But ultimately, we barring any unforeseen instances of, you know, disruptions in the economy or things with COVID going wrong, hopefully that won't happen. We think it will be another leg up eventually. But the sideways moving market is very typical in these instances.
To that point, if you turn your TV on today, yesterday we closed above 3,000 on the S&P, which is a huge number. We'll see what happens if we can hold that today. So if you're looking at CNBC like I am, you'll see that would be a good number to hold on to in the equity markets. Should give us a big support level if that happens. So one more page forward. Should be page 6 I want to look at. So again, history tells us that hopefully our chart going forward looks like this. Just back to what I was saying, what Derek was saying, 75, 98, 91. You see that hopefully over the long term, you have a bull market with short air market pullbacks. One more time. So the one thing that we've been missing, what I talked about with the portfolio, is that the market's been very narrow, very, very narrow when it comes to what's been working. Mostly technology has been working, a little bit of healthcare. What we needed in this market was some rotation into other parts of the equity markets, and we've seen that in the last week or two. So now you're seeing not only large cap growth and value rallying, we're seeing other parts of the market. Financials are rallying, mid caps and small caps are finally starting to rally. So that's a healthy rotation. Value is actually starting to rally a little bit too. So we're seeing not just a single part of the market rallying, but the overall market turning in a good direction. It's very, very healthy to have that type of rotation going forward. I'm sure it's going to continue indefinitely, but it's a good thing to see. So we're starting to see, again, this last 30 days have been great. We're starting to see some healthy signs. And then on the last page, I'll end with, and we could actually open it up to some conversation. This is the world we live in. So there's two sides to every trade. There's people that are betting that stocks go up, and there's people that are betting that stocks go down. So if you look at that far right position, very, very far right bottom position, all this says is that there's been a lot of people that have been betting against this market, especially at the point where we've had this raging rally here for the last 60 days. So people are thinking that this is getting toppy, it's getting expensive, which it is, but there's a lot of people betting that it'll go down. Now, the longer you bet that it goes down, the more painful it gets. So think about it this way. If you have a position where you put $100 into a stock, you pretty much know your max loss, right? So if $100 turns to zero, you can't lose more than $100. Well, if you do the opposite of that trade and you have a $100 position and you're wrong and you're betting on it goes up, your losses could be indefinite. So they can go to 1,000 and they come in, you know, take your house from you. So short sellers get nervous in markets like this. So when they have to cover their positions, meaning they have to buy back into the market, it produces extraordinary rallies in that situation. So we're seeing these short sellers are getting nervous. They're worrying about the market going higher. They have to cover their positions. So what happens is that you have these sharp, sharp rallies. So that's something that's really helping the market. Hopefully the shorts are wrong going forward, but there's two sides to every trade. So if that chart continues in that situation, you should see a pretty good continued rally going forward. So again, the moral to the story is it's been a rough year. We're bouncing back. We should see more volatility. Obviously, hopefully, we'll go farther and longer, farther up and longer out. We'll do well, but in the near term, we have to be prepared for those pullbacks. And as we continue to get cash, we'll continue to buy into those down markets. So, with that said, I could open up to any questions.
If I may ask. I may just add one more statement, not to belabor this. I know everybody loves talking about investments on a Thursday morning, but Leanne, if you could go back a few charts to page five, not five on the one more thing. Yeah, right here. So the only thing I wanted to point out here is the upper right chart that just shows you in times the last in recent history when the market has sold off or and had tremendous gains, and that this column, the 40-day return, as you can see, moving out 20 days, 40 days, 80 days, 120 days, the market trends higher 100% of the time. So just on a way to end on a high note, that usually when a trend up like this happens so quickly in 40 days, you know, several months out, the market is 100% of the time, you can see the bottom of this green square, 100% of the time, the market ends higher. So that's a good sign. Again, to Dave's point, we're going to see some more volatility going up and down, but ultimately the trend hopefully will, history will repeat itself and trend higher. So just wanted to end my commentary on that point.
Any questions for anybody?
I had a quick question. I don't really understand the mechanics of how much flexibility you have to invest before you need to come back to us. And several months ago, we talked about how SURF, because the meeting was earlier in the month, was able to take advantage of the downturn in the market, and we were not. I just want to make sure that we have the flexibility to help support the investments if there are these dips in the market, like you're saying.
Traditionally, with the board, we've been investing based on instructions or votes from the board. In the past, they've given us a little bit of leeway and discretion as to when to do that. But that's really a decision more to do with the board as far as of when. Just happens to be that SURF meets a week or two at times earlier.
You have no window to change. You have I would imagine we give you some cap, and above that cap of investment decisions, you would have to come back to us to ask. Is that not the case?
Technically, no. Yeah, technically, no. Our investment policy statements will allow us to go within ranges of our and outside of ranges for short periods of time in volatility. But historically, we have not had the discretion to independently go out and tweak the allocation based on what we think. Now, I think that would be a smart thing to consider, giving us some discretion between meetings, whether it's through a quick call or an email, or full discretion to say, hey, if you want to add up to, say, $3 or $5 million into this asset class, you can do that based on your opinion on timing. But that has not been the case in the past. Very often, funds have the ability to hire people that act as their chief investment officer with discretion. So that's something that we have not done. But for situations like this, to your question, Mr. Mayor, that's something that can be considered as far as giving us a range of where to go within an asset class and how much money we can invest and when.
And I think historically things have changed in the marketplace where, you know, sell-offs were more methodical and didn't happen so violently up until, you know, recent history, the last 10 years or so, when, you know, program selling happens and a lot of these large hedge funds create so much volatility in the market. That never really existed in the past. So the infrequency of our meetings were not that difficult to say, hey, there's a buying opportunity here. But now things happen so quickly and so violently, obviously times have changed. So I think it's a good point and something that makes sense for you all to consider.
And you're saying that for other pension funds, do you work with other pension funds?
Of course.
Yes.
Other pension funds, how typical is it for them to have what we're doing now versus a designated individual that has the flexibility to make some decisions with the?
I would say as a percentage, probably about 90% do it the way in which City of New Haven's doing it, with a committee of trustees that make votes. It's not what we should do. No, there may be.
On a monthly basis?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the question.
Summary report.
Those decisions on a monthly basis?
Yeah, so the boards meet A lot of boards meet quarterly and a lot of boards meet monthly. So again, the vast majority of boards meet on either a quarterly or monthly basis to make decisions during that meeting. You know, the other part of that question is, should you give us discretion within meetings to add to certain asset classes? My personal opinion is yes. However, with that said, what really drives this portfolios or these portfolios, whether it's Surfer, Police, and Fire, is the fact that sticking to our long-term assumptions and our long-term asset allocation assumptions is really what this is all about. So to try to be too tactical within a market like this can work in two different ways. So yes, I think it's something we should consider and talk about. But again, it's not a perfect situation where we're always going to know exactly when to buy in. So we got to be careful with being a little bit too aggressive or outthinking what our long-term objectives are.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. So you currently have, and this is part of my just pension 101, frankly, so maybe I could take it offline, but I'll ask one more question and we can do it elsewhere. But you currently have zero discretion to, for example, slowly change whatever cash we have to equities or bonds we have to equities or whatever. You don't have any discretion to do that over time from something we've approved in the past. Like, what decisions are you making then that we've empowered you to make?
Okay, so we do have the discretion to manage the allocation based on what we think is going to happen in the near term and the long term. So we do very often over a period of a year bring ideas to the board and say, hey, we're going to underweight this asset class or we're going to add to another asset class. So yes, we're driving the ship when it comes to where we think the market's going to be. However, intra-meeting, we haven't had the ability to say, hey, we think right now it's time to throw $5 million at large cap growth without a vote from the board itself. Whereas other funds do give discretion to a consultant to say, hey, we understand the long-term objective here. We're going to give you discretion to do these changes when you think is right. The only thing we really take discretion on is sending money out to Northern Trust to pay benefits when those benefits are due. And we send that money out and we contact Leanna, whoever we need to do, as far as that's concerned. But most everything else comes down to talking to the trustees during meetings in order to execute a significant or a change in the allocation. I think it's something that we should consider talking about going forward. I could bring some more information to the board as other, how other funds do it, other cities do it.
Okay, I appreciate that. Yeah, I think that at some point we need to have that meeting offline, Dave, so I can just ask a number of questions and understand this better.
Trustee Cannon.
Go ahead, Trustee Cannon.
I have the utmost faith in our consultants, but there is history, specifically with this fund, many years ago, prior to Dave and Derek, where a not-so-ethical investment consultant was doing things on his own. So I am in line with you, Trustee Elicker, with possibly taking advantage financially of getting it ahead of the market or getting involved right now, putting more money there. I am not opposed to us in this age of 2020 with electronic IT. We can check in with each other, but I definitely believe that we have a fiduciary responsibility to oversee all decisions made. If Dave and Derek were to come through an email to all the trustees and say, this is something I think I should be looking into, by all means, with a simple response back to them through Leanna or that office or through the whole board as a whole. But it would be something that would be smart if we were to stay on top of. Dave, you know, I very loyal to you. You've been great to us. This fund is doing, I'm very, very happy to say this fund through all this turmoil, I believe is doing pretty well thanks to your guidance. And I'm grateful that we stuck with you with the transition to Raymond James. But we do have a responsibility to the policemen and firemen to make sure that we are overlooking all decisions that are made. Now I'll go back to Larry Gray. Jerry Sagnella could jump in because he's been around for many, many years and he's seen this. So, Trustee Elicker, I'm on board with a lot of things you're saying. My only amendment to that would be that we all do have a say whether you're making a move for an allocation or if we're getting aggressive to throw some cash into the market, we definitely want to stay on top of it as a fund. Thanks,
Mr. Cannon. That makes a lot of sense. I'm sure there's pros and cons to this, and I don't think anything needs to be decided right now. But it would be good to explore the option more. Attorney Cohen, I don't know if you're talking to someone else or if you're trying to chime in, but you're on mute.
Yeah.
In terms of two legal issues, I do agree with Trustee Cannon about the importance of making these decisions. And we would really have to look at the special act and see what authority we can give to Raymond James. But on the freedom of information issue, we cannot have votes by email. So we would have to have a telephonic meeting or a Zoom meeting between the regular meetings. That's no problem at all, but we just can't do it by email.
Yeah, I guess I would just say to Raymond James that if there's another opportunity that comes up that's urgent, we can work to make a meeting happen because we wouldn't want to miss an opportunity. So in the meantime, just be aware of that. Obviously, it's a hassle to organize a meeting, so you have to be pretty confident that it's the right decision. But I presume the other trustees would be open to taking that opportunity if you think it's important enough.
Sure, I'll get some information together talking about industry norms, and then I'm available 24/7. Mr. Mayor, if you want me to come by and talk about this offline.
Okay. This is Trustee Cousin. Dave, if I'm understanding it correctly, what are we looking at one time, taking a look at our asset allocation class and trying to make adjustments as needed, for especially for times like this?
Yeah, we've spoken at length about our allocation over the number of years. Obviously, a lot of this stuff was easier face-to-face, but we continually look at that. So in order of importance, over 90% of your return comes from your allocation, not your individual managers, which is shocking, isn't it? Think about that. So we look at our investment policy statement, which is our roadmap to what we are allowed to do. So we obviously don't go above and beyond that when it comes to recommending to you overweighting a certain asset class. Otherwise, we have to change the entire investment policy statement. But as far as our asset allocation, it's key, especially for long-term assumptions with the actuaries. So we're looking at what's going to happen tomorrow and then what's going to happen next year, but we're really looking at what's going to happen over the next 5 to 7 years and then 20 years out. So we do make changes to the allocation, but we're trying not to get too cute in the short term. All right, this is a long, long boat and a long, long journey. It's going to outlive all of us, this pension. So it's easy to say in these very, very volatile times that we're going to try to use discretion. And I think that is a good point. We should use discretion within the asset allocation, but we shouldn't be making large blank movements within our investment policy statement without really thinking about historical returns and what's happened in times like this. So it's hard. I'm staring at my computer, both my laptops and this TV, because I'm stuck at home a lot of times endlessly. So it's easy to say, I'm gonna do this right now. But I think that we have to stick to our disciplines, really be disciplined and look at history. And history tells us that we stick to our asset allocation and we hire quality people to manage that money over long periods of time, we should do well. But with that said, to Mayor Elliker's point, something maybe should be discussed as to how do we communicate to the board intermeeting as far as making changes or the possibility of having discretion when it comes to timing of investments. So for example, if the board said, hey, I know we're going to add $3 million to this manager, but instead of saying that you need to invest it, put that money in that investment manager's hands today, we're going to give you discretion to do it over the next 2 weeks based on market movement. So it's something we could bring to the board and make a suggestion as far as, again, what other funds do across the nation.
Okay, I have to hop off pretty soon. Are there any other questions for the from the trustees for the investment managers?
Trustee Cannon, Dave, where are we right now with cash on hand?
So we have between the two different holding spots, there's three holding spots. To answer your question, right now we're about $10 million, but between now and the end of the month, we should be closer to $20 million in June. Something's coming to us in about a week.
We have reserves with Northern Trust?
We have reserves that we need to send out money to them within the next 30 days. So we should be back into that about $15 million range in cash after we send that money out.
So in 20 days, we should be about $15 million plus in cash. Where do we stand with our allocation right now? And if we have room in any allocation, is there anything that you're tracking at this moment?
Well, again, we've been leaning towards domestic equities because they're the ones that have been hit, as well as international, but we've had the most confidence in U.S. domestic equity managers. So we've been adding over time to large cap managers, whether it's growth or value. This portfolio has a size where it's a core manager, meaning that it invests in both. Has done very well. So again, as we have excess cash, we'll be looking to deploy it between those managers. However, I think my suggestion for today is to not invest any more money at this time. I think we're getting toppy. I think there'll be more opportunities within the next couple months, especially the whole sell it, May and go away. It's something that's been studied for many, many years that if you bought the market in the fall and sold it in May, you'd have great returns. So we could be in a situation where we're getting lofty here. And there'll be opportunities over the next number of months on pullbacks to invest more money. And with that said, based on the rotation of the market into more value versus growth, I think we should be adding to a number of managers on all different market capitalizations from large mid to small throughout the summer based on pullbacks. And hopefully we'll have enough cash flow. If we don't have enough cash, then I think we should trim the allocation in areas that have outperformed and move into other areas. So we're going to stay low on our allocation to fixed income right now. Continue to add the equity managers throughout all the different asset classes going forward, especially on the U.S. side.
What is our timeline? It may be for Leanna. What is our timeline for an infusion of funds from the city?
Dave, before you answer that, I have to hop off, so I'm going to turn over the meeting to Trustee Cannon, the vice chair. Thanks, everyone, for all your hard work.
Thank you.
Thank you.
See you later, Mayor.
Thank you.
So, Dave, where do we stand on the last question I asked you?
What was the last point?
Well, the last question was basically what are we anticipating as far as from the city when the next contribution from the city would be? How far out are we on that under normal history, past history?
Well, you got Derek. Do you have an answer on that as far as the fiscal year we're looking at?
So historically, you know, obviously that's been a moving target, Pat, as you know. In past lives, it was as early as, you know, late July, early August. That was a few administrations ago. Then it went to four times a year, capital infusions. Then it went to twice a year. And then ultimately, Darrell Jones was able to get the TANs to deposit, I believe, usually around late September or October. Pat was when we see a full infusion typically. Sometimes it'll come in two close increments closely together. But in modern history, it was from the TANs and it was usually October-ish.
Yeah, Derek, you're right. Derek, it's Mike Garmin, you're right. The last few years, it's been around October of when the pension payment has been made from the city, probably the last two or three years around that time, September, October.
Thanks, Mike.
On the investment side, if there's no other questions, just want to thank everybody for the business. It's appreciated. We'll be in touch if it's imminent, an idea. And you can obviously reach out to us if there's any questions intermediate. Stay safe, too.
Any further questions for Dave or Derek from the board? With that, Leanna, is there any other items that are not been addressed?
This is Leanna. No, we've covered everything on the agenda. Thank you.
I think the only thing left is a motion to adjourn. Can I receive that?
So move.
Second.
Motion to adjourn. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes. Thank you, everybody.
All right. See you later.
Take care.
Yeah.